This is Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. We're back with more episodes looking at technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. In this episode, we talk with Bob Watson, the CEO of Health Gorilla. He talks about efforts to make it easier to exchange health data, why TEFCA isn't dead, and in fact, maybe getting some teeth. We also talk about why he came out of retirement, AI in healthcare, and the need to put the patient first. It's a great conversation. Thanks for joining us. This is Databook. Thanks for joining us today. We are talking today with Bob Watson, the CEO of Health Gorilla. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Okay. Why don't you talk a little bit about your background and about Health Gorilla for those who may not be familiar with the company.
So I've been in the healthcare IT space for the better part of 45 years through a cross-section of industries. I actually retired in 23 and the Health Gorilla story pulled me out of retirement. And I think, you know, Health Gorilla was, if not the first, one of the first commercial QHINs to get approved by the federal government. And we're also uniquely also a QHIO, which is a California specific designation as well. So interesting business, interesting market. I think for the first time in the history of TEFCA, you know, our view is that TEFCA is not dead and that there will be teeth in TEFCA going forward.
Well, a lot to talk about there. Let's talk about the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, also known as TEFCA. I was at a conference earlier this year where there were some healthcare leaders talking about TEFCA and its effectiveness, and some folks had some sort of differences of opinion as to whether it was really going to be able to meet its promise. But you say TEFCA is not dead and it is very much alive. Just talk about why you feel that way and what you feel like the promise of TEFCA really can be for the healthcare industry.
Look, I think as citizens, whether we're tech vendors, providers, caregivers, and patients, we have an obligation to make individual healthcare information available to providers at the point of care, at the time of care, to improve that care. I think that's a critical part of this. I think TEFCA limped along for a few years, and in all honesty, just frankly, because there wasn't any teeth in it. It was entirely voluntary and no punishment for not participating. I think as we go forward, what we've seen this year in our own traffic. So like everybody else, we connect to the legacy networks. We all know who they are. Because of the 10 QHINs, we get the 10 QHIN data every time we query a patient. You know, at the start of 25, across the industry, not just ourselves, so I see everybody else's traffic. The traffic on the QHIN was, you know, 5% of the total traffic, you know, including the traffic on the legacy networks. Today, that number is north of 10%, so it's accelerating. And if you follow the position statements by Secretary Kennedy or Dr. Oz or Amy Gleason at DOGE, there is a movement afoot to enforce making individual patients' medical information available at the point of care, at the time of care.
Well, there was that event at the White House in July with health tech leaders talking about the, I guess, the Make Health Tech Great Again event. So it does seem like this is a high priority for the administration. Would you say?
It certainly seems that way. I mean, there's, you know, I'm back in D.C. over the next couple of weeks with Dr. Keene and also with Amy Gleason from DOGE to talk about how we can be helpful to support the message behind a CMS aligned network.
So definitely some interest and some momentum happening there. You know, when we talk about the importance of providers having patient information, like in practical terms, talk about what we really mean or why this is so critical to improve healthcare.
So let me give you a real Personal example. So I relocated to North Carolina a couple of years ago from Atlanta. I'm approaching a certain age that the next big birthday starts with a seven. That would be the first number, not the second number. And what I experienced here, and I used the two major health systems in Atlanta. I'm not going to call anybody out, but here in North Carolina, 2 years later, I'm still having release of information requests rejected by providers. And that's not right. And this is where I think the enforcement comes in. This whole concept of information blocking that's been in the news and in some lawsuits. I honestly don't think there's anything nefarious, by the way, at the provider level for not sending the information, but I do believe that the system doesn't reward providers or punish providers or reward providers for providing the information or punish them for not doing it. The current administration seems to be heading down the punishment path. Although in the last couple of conversations we've had with the team in DC, joining the CMS Aligned Network or TEFCA, whatever you want to call it, it's going to continue to be voluntary, but not optional. That's a very nuanced sort of thought pattern of the administration. Voluntary, but not optional. You can figure out what that means.
In other words, you can choose or choose not to, but you're going to be facing some punishment if you're not complying. So that's your
Honestly, I
choice.
think that I think I Ron, I think that's where we're going to end up. I mean, now, we've got another, I don't know, 3 years of this administration to figure it out, but I think over the next couple of years there'll be tremendous forward momentum in supporting the idea of a CMS aligned network. Just look at the traffic numbers I gave you. If the traffic's doubling on the QHINs, people are getting aligned. I mean, there's something like 9,200 separate organizations representing 41,000 care points already on TEFCA. And then there's all the traffic that's on the legacy networks. I mean, in our case, across the legacy networks and those of us who are clients that are hitting the QHIN, I mean, we're looking at 5 to 10 million transactions a month. And again, that number overall is probably double what it was last year.
So definitely seeing some real growth and some real momentum. You're obviously onboarding more organizations onto TEFCA. How complicated of a process is that? How's that process working out?
Arcane is the first word that comes to mind. There is an entity called the IRCE, which approves these things. And look, I think, again, that's an important construct. So we do need to have some guide rails, right? It can't just be free world, do what you want. Everybody can get on the networks. I mean, there's been a lot of noise about people misusing the data to use in non-approved use cases. And presently the two primary use cases are, as you know, are treatment, which means there has to be a physician at the other end of the exchange. It can't be a law firm. It has to be a physician. Likewise, individual access service was approved last year. It has been slow to roll out across all the vendors, primarily because we believe there was some information blocking activity that made it difficult for that to happen. But the RCE and with support from CMS and the team at DOGE, I think we're going to see those walls coming down. We also believe that other use cases will be opened up. Payment and operations, the whole relationship between the provider and the payer, which is always, I'll use the nicest word I can think of, wonky. I think we have an obligation to approve that because in the payer side, if we can shorten the time to get care approved, that's a win for the patient. I think what we have to focus on here is what do we do to win for the patient?
And that's often sometimes unintentionally, perhaps, but sometimes gets lost in a lot of the mechanisms of healthcare for sure.
Like physicians are here to take care of patients, right? That's their role in the planet. Well, let's make it easy for them. Let's give them the information they need so they can have a proper diagnosis, treat the patient has a healthier outcome, and the doctor gets paid. Let's to me that seems simple, but as you know, I mean, obviously as I already pointed out, I'm much older than you, but this stuff is irritating. And I just want my medical records delivered to my current physician. That should be simple. It's not.
And at this point, it's not really a technological problem per se. It's not like we don't have the technology to make this happen. It's more other forces that are have prevented this from progressing.
This is not a technology problem. And I mean, all of us, of all the 10Q hints, we all go about solving the problem a little bit differently. But the bottom line is, it's not a technical hurdle. It's malaise to some extent.
Obviously, there's been a lot of concern about data security, especially in light of a number of high-profile cyber attacks in healthcare. How do you ensure when you're dealing with that much information that it is being kept safe?
Look, we got the amount of money the QHINs as a group spend to ensure data security, would you would be stunned at the amount of money. And it, we all have to go through high trust certification. To sort of tie this back to my own history, that my business before this bumped up against the classified side of things. And, the federal government has solved how to transmit classified information globally. It's not that hard to do it here. You have to do it right, and it requires an investment. I mean, out of our, if I look at our employee base, it's probably 8% of our associates are somehow involved in security. It's a big investment.
And a necessary one, unfortunately, in today's world, for sure.
Well, and it's appropriate. Look, I don't want some dingling seeing my medical record, but I want my physician in North Carolina to have my medical record from my physician in Atlanta. That doesn't seem complicated.
There's so much talk about interoperability for years, and I mean, years ago, I was hearing people saying we're really on the cusp, we're really on the cusp, and you've heard it longer than I have, for sure. Are we getting towards the cusp, or at least in sight of the cusp of real interoperability?
Yeah, I think we're in sight. I mean, the first time I touched interoperability was in the 90s when I worked for an EHR vendor. And we were trying to do an interoperability thing. And what we learned in the 90s, it wouldn't work because the vendors hated each other, right? Epic didn't want to share data with Cerner and blah, 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 blah. Then in 2015, I acquired for the business. I was CEO at the time. I acquired one of the first, I think, reasonably successful interoperability companies, a company called CareFX. And even then, it was a struggle. And so, what I think makes the difference today is that we have a federal government that seems to be committed not just in words, but in action to facilitating the movement of patient data to improve patient care. I feel good about that.
Is that the difference in terms of like the previous administration? I mean, the previous administration is obviously promoting TEFCA and talking about exchange, but is there really the difference of putting more of the teeth behind it?
Yeah, I do think it's the issue of the teeth. I mean, look, think about. I'll use an example. Think about you're driving your car and you're speeding. And you'll continue to speed until there's a flashing blue light behind you. I think there's a flashing blue light coming. to enforce the voluntary but not optional participation.
I'd like to point out to our friends in law enforcement who may be listening, I never speed, but I can't speak for Bob, but I don't speed. But we'll just set that aside. But one thing I was interested on also asking about in terms of just sharing data, it's not just about sharing data, but also making sure that it's usable. So how do you work to make sure that that's taking place?
Yeah, so that's an excellent point. That is exactly where vendors like Health Gorilla can make a difference. I mean, we fundamentally believe that it's inefficient for the provider for us to just deliver data. We have to do something with it before we deliver it. We use the words AI ready. And that either freaks people out or have them doing, cartwheels down the middle of the highway. But that just delivering the data is not going to work. The physicians will reject it. They won't use it. They won't pay attention to it. They won't click on the button that gives them the data. But if you give them the data in a format that's summarized and highlighted on certain things, they can make their own determination and they can treat the patient faster. The speed of treatment is important. I don't know the last time you've been to a primary care doctor, but you get 20 minutes, of which 3 minutes might be hands-on, and the other seven is looking at the computer trying to figure out what's there. What we've tried to do is create an environment through our EHR partners, most of whom are well known in the industry who they are. We try to deliver something to the physician that is actionable. And that's what's going to really make this work. Just raw data by itself is a waste of time. If you look at the value-based care side of the business, those vendors, particularly if they're at risk, they need real-time, accurate information on the patients that are in their panels to make sure they're getting the care they deserve. And I keep emphasizing this point. What's important to me and important to Health Gorilla is that we make the information available to improve patient care, period. We can only do that if we deliver it in a format that's usable.
And it feels like that would have so much application for not just getting glimpses of patients, even maybe getting better chance, sense of preventive care options, or being able to identify patients that might be at greater risk, instead of saying, hey, instead of a certain age, maybe we need to get you screened sooner than later because you're showing a greater potential risk for a certain condition.
That's exactly how the value-based care people who are at risk use platforms like us to help them in that decision process. You can, if you're at risk for paying for the care for a patient, particularly an elderly patient, you want to make sure that they get their tests in a timely fashion, their weight's being monitored, all those kinds of things in a timely fashion. And this is what vendors like us can do in the QHINs.
Yeah, we can't have a conversation about health technology without AI. Just wanted to ask, there's so much talk about, fostering innovation, but at the same time, having sure there's some appropriate guardrails for development of AI, especially in healthcare. How do you strike that balance in your perspective?
Yeah, look, I think I like to believe that the vendor community knows the right thing to do. There's the right thing and the wrong thing. AI can certainly support the right thing. There can be nefarious actors who use it for the wrong reasons, but we can't make patient care good for the patient without using AI because there's just so much data. You've got to use it to figure out what to send to the physician. So, for example, if I go to an orthopedic surgeon, he or she is probably not going to care about my BMI or whether or not I had my, XYZ test. What they are going to care about is what other encounters I've had in the ortho community. Did I have my, how many shoulder surgeries have I had? Those are the information they need to be able to assess how they can better better assist me in my care.
It just feels like there's so much technology at work here, but at the same time, there's so much need for basic communication. When I hear from other friends who are going through health issues and maybe they're seeing specialists, no doctors are actually talking to each other. And maybe that's getting into the whole information blocking or just whatever. She spends half her appointments talking about what was done at a previous appointment. And especially if it's a small window of appointment, as you just alluded to, that's a challenge. So that feels like one of the things that has to be fixed as we talk about these things.
Yeah, again, I think this is where ending information blocking, doing something with the data before it's served up to the physician so they can actually use it. The way to do that is to use AI to really make sure that physician is getting, again, it's the AI deciding what's the best information to have, but the physician can always dig further if they want. And the very technically savvy physicians do spend a lot of time doing that.
I wanted to go back something for almost at the beginning when you talked about the Health Gorilla story being so compelling that it pulled you out of retirement. Could you just talk a little bit about what specifically was maybe the thing that really reignited your desire to get back into the game?
Yeah, look, I think I mentioned this earlier. Back in the 90s, when I was working for an EHR vendor, we tried to do it. This connect, we called it connected communities. We were actually able to do it in a community in Minnesota where we had everybody was a all the hospitals, nursing homes, everybody was a client. So you could actually connect things up and share data. There was a technology hurdle then that didn't that doesn't exist today. And then again, I tried it with the CareFX asset 10 years ago. What intrigued me to come do this was that I felt like there were going to be tailwinds. There was going to be federal government support for what was going to happen. I unfortunately think, because the way the world works, that support has to have some kind of punishment aspect to it, which is consistent with the administration. And it, but those. That sort of, for me, it was a perfect storm of here's a problem I've tried to solve twice in 30 years and couldn't do it. Here's a chance, another bite of the apple, and the environment's changed.
So you feel pretty confident that this is a third time's a charm?
Let's hope so. It's my last shot.
Well, what's some advice you would have for other healthcare leaders, maybe even other founders who are starting to pursue their vision or build their own companies? Like, what are some things they should do? What are some mistakes they should avoid?
Yeah, look, the first thing is do the right thing. I mean, you know, founders get wrapped up around, oh, my investor wants me to do Y, my investor wants me to do Z. Look, you need to listen to them, but you run the business. Run the business. Do the right thing. Treat your end users with respect, treat your associates with respect, but do the right thing. And I think most of us know what the right thing is. Unfortunately, you know, a segment of the population grew up in a world where they don't necessarily want to do the right thing. But I believe that this administration is trying to do the right thing as it relates to this particular topic. Making healthcare information, individual patient healthcare information available to the caregivers to support that patient, period. And to go back to the statement about make health tech great again. I'm in the camp of let's make it great, period.
I was about to say, because it seems like that's sort of been the challenge, like that, a lot of people said that a lot of the healthcare industry's not really embraced technology the way other industry sectors have.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, I just let's just make it great. Make it great for the patients. Everybody wins.
And again, I really like that's one thing you focus throughout this conversation is like focusing on the patient and not some of the other things that can kind of distract from patient care.
Look, the other stuff's noise in the machine. The only thing that matters is that the patients are taken care of. That's it. Everything else is noise.
Well, now we're getting pretty near the end of our window. Anything we haven't touched base on in terms of interoperability or just Health Gorilla in general that we didn't want to leave off the table?
And no, look, I've been pretty fixed on my points, which is let's make Caltech great, period. Let's make sure we do it in a way that improves patient care. And Let's just stop information blocking.
And you feel like that's going to happen now with the teeth in some of these
Yeah, look, I
growing?
think there's enough traffic in the, or noise in the system from other vendors around these subjects. We can do this. This is the time to do it right now.
Well, that sounds like a good place to leave it with a sense of urgency. So, Bob, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, in-depth analysis, and deeper dives on the big issues in the world of healthcare, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick. Thanks for joining us. Take care.